Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm Tony. I'm an addict.
Tony.
Bear with me, please. I'm scared as hell. You know, I've come down here for several years to this convention in Ocean City. I actually forgot one year that I saw on the wall out there last night that I came to, and I was like, damn, I must have been out of it when I came here that year. Most of the time I travel by myself, so it's hard for me to get connected with people. You know, I'm a loner, I isolate, and just like as I used, and I used just like everyone did, so I'm not going to go into a whole lot of drug log and all that kind of stuff. To qualify myself, I'm an addict, you know. I used to stand outside of the conventions and meetings, and I'd look at the guys and the women and see the fellowship and how everybody was connected with each other and hugging, and I'd say to myself, you know, damn, I wish I was there. I'd see the speaker stand up in a meeting and share their experience, strength, and hope, and I was like, damn, one day I'd like to be there, you know. But fear, my own fear and my own personal self-loathing and low self-esteem and all that type of stuff just didn't allow me to step forward and take a chance and, you know, and think that I was worthy enough to give something back. And today, coming in here, I was fine. I've been, you know, thinking. I haven't written anything down. I hadn't really planned for it. I was like, you know, I prayed to my higher power and said, hey, you know what? Help me, you know, speak honest and true from my heart. You know, and being up in front of all you people, you know, it's really hard. I've never really had a problem with actually speaking to people and sharing my experience, strength, and hope, because it's a testimony for me to actually let a newcomer know that you don't have to use, you know. And when Shima asked me, we go back some years, if I wanted to speak, and she told me what the topic, and I was like, oh, yippee, you know. That's a good topic for me, because when I first came into the rooms, I wasn't worried about recovery. I wasn't thinking about recovery. I was just thinking about saving my ass. You know, my boss told me if you don't get your shit straightened up, you're going to lose your job. You know, I was trying to stay employed. Most of my life I've been employed. I've never been without a job. I've been blessed in that manner. So when he told me that, and it's kind of funky because I kind of got involved in a relationship my first day clean. I mean, and not to be too graphic about it, you know, she had almost a year. So, one day. And that was after my third relapse, my second relapse, actually, from being in another relationship. We got together, and it was like something out of a freaking movie, you know. When I first saw her, it was like, damn. I heard Tony share last night about the dude that she saw walking in the rooms, and when I saw her little tight ass walk down the street, I was like, oh my God, you know. But I heard her story and knew in the back of my mind it was going to be problems and it was going to be trouble, but, you know, the disease of addiction is very, very cunning. And I have to admit, I have to be honest, I love women. You know, they're like candy to me. I have to be honest, you know, just because it's sweet, you know, it looks good, don't make it good for you, you know. So as time went on, she was involved in a program, and she had that relationship with other recovering addicts in the rooms. I mean, she had a following, you know. She had just that outspoken personality that just, you know, and would fight the devil for fire if she could, you know. And I liked that because I really didn't have to do anything. And I could hide behind our shirt tails and meet people and talk to people and this and that and getting, you know. And I worked a lot, you know. I was a chef, so I was in the kitchen every time everybody eat. And when people were at meetings, that's where I was. So it was hard to try to, you know. I did my 90-90, of course, you know. I made it the thing to do that. You know, I had to leave and come back sometimes. You know, I was lucky to be with a job that they afforded me that opportunity. They understood. Well, it was an OTB, so everybody drank and gambled. So, you know, they understood what an addict was in a sense. So, needless to say, I hadn't really found a sponsor. I hadn't really taken any suggestions. I was just trying to stay clean one day at a time. I didn't want to go back to that life that I was at because it was too painful. At the end of my active addiction, I wanted to die. I was too scared to put a bullet in my head, you know. All I wanted to use, you know. I attempted a couple of times to commit suicide, but, you know, I didn't have the cojones to finish that either. So it was basically slow walking myself down to death, you know. And I suffer from low self-esteem. And I suffer from codependency, you know. So when I took on being her man, when I took on coming to the program, I thought all this thing was like, oh, wow, I've got me a woman in NA. I got me a program. Ain't working no damn steps. You know, I'm going to meetings. I got a job. You know, I got this stuff going for. I'm getting healthy and, you know. But, you know, recovery has a way of walking up and taking hold of you. Reality sets in. And the more I tried to do, see, I'm a type of person that, in order to make you see me as something special, I'll do as much as I can for you to get what I need to get. And that's so I can feel good about myself. So with her, and knowing her story, I listen to people. I observe. I sit and watch people, and I pick up on key things you say. You know, I never really thought much about it, that that's what I was doing. But, you know, I learned that as a childhood growing up. See, my father was an alcoholic. He served in Korea. He came home and he accused mom of all kinds of men and this and that. And she was Jehovah's Witness, so, you know, he was airborne, you know, and he drank like a fish. And when I got old enough to drink, we were buddies. And then I followed him in the military the same year. So I was really screwed up from the get, from the start. So in order to actually try to make myself feel better, I took on this relationship with this woman, right? And we were as different as night and day. Some 10 years of age difference. And needless to say, to make a long story short, she got to the point where I've never been one of a really type of person to cheat on my companions, things like that, or really branch out to do that type of thing. I always found it hard to deal with one, let alone deal with two and three and four. And I always had low self-esteem, so I was always worried about somebody else going up in my shit. Because I didn't know if I could keep it, or I didn't have enough to keep it, or I wasn't good enough to be able to keep her with me, or I didn't have all the money, the fancy cars, and, you know, that smooth rap and all that good stuff, you know. I worked. If there's anything I know how to do, I work. I started when I was 9, you know. And I can get lost in that. So while I was working, she was playing. Okay. It shows a true test in my recovery, and in the program Narcotics Anonymous is what happened after that is we went to counseling, we did all that kind of stuff. And we talked and we fought some more. We had a son. I have him. I've been blessed with him. Being a single father, because she hasn't been able to stay clean. But to come into the rooms, and granted now, I had got a sponsor, but I hadn't really started working the steps, and we were just talking. Granted, coming into the rooms, I had to sit around some of them same men, and some of them same women, and hug, and show that compassion, and that that love unconditionally to them, even though I know what you did. And then when I had people over my house, because my father, we never had anybody over the house. He never had nobody in the house. He didn't trust people, didn't want them around. So I was like that. I didn't, you know, want anybody, even in NA, I didn't want anybody around. I mean, because why? What happened? You know, in the back of my mind, I knew something was going on. So I left the rooms for like 8 months because the resentment and the anger and the stuff that I was feeling, granted, I didn't use. By the grace of God, I didn't pick up that whole time. I was clubbing, running all over the place, just hitting everything I could hit, doing everything that I could do to try to mask that pain, to try to stuff it in. I couldn't pick up and use because that's what I used to do to fight off what I was feeling. You know, so I just isolated. I did Tony, you know. But somewhere along the way, I saw another addict. Where you been? I started going back to meetings. I got another sponsor. We started working the steps. Somewhere along the way, we fell out of touch of each other, and he passed. And it hit me really hard. Because along that way, I lost a nephew. He shot himself in the head. I lost my father. He died of cancer. My son and I were on our way to visit him. I lost a couple of aunts and uncles. All in a matter of 6 months. I lost a couple of people, a good friend of mine, my son's godfather in recovery, John. And he used to come down here. He rode a motorcycle. And lost him, and that was pretty intense. But I never used. I didn't have to use. So I got up to the fourth step with this sponsor just as he died, and we were in the middle of it when he passed, you know. And I started then to start really seeing some things that had to deal with my codependency, with me trying to do so much to make myself feel good, you know, but actually not actually doing anything for myself. Go figure that. So, I was involved in another relationship, of course. You all know the story. I need to have somebody, you know, to make me feel complete. At least I thought so. So there's a woman that wasn't in recovery. She was what I call alien, you know, or a normal person. And boy, she was fine. She had two kids. She was a nurse, a dental lab technician, and she was making good money. You know, she was positive and doing, but she had issues. And here comes Superman. I can make it all go away. I got this wonderful thing called NA. I'm in the program. I'm staying clean. I'm doing what I need to do, you know? I'm spiritual. I was smothering the hell out of that woman. She didn't have to do nothing, which in turn made her feel as if she was inadequate because she couldn't meet up to my standard. See, I already told you that I'm a loner. I don't wait for people. It was hard coming down here with my sponsor because he drove, and I had to wait for him to pick me up. I'm like lost without my wheels. People know me. I'll run. I will walk. I will ride my bike. I'll ride my damn dog if I could to get where I need to be and not have to wait on somebody. So it's hard. I've got to practice some principles, you know, acceptance, you know. I don't want to get off my head. There's so much. So we split up. She left me, of course. Packed up everything, lock, stock, and barrel, and jetted. I sat out in the street and watched him load up the truck before I came home that evening. Don't you know, some 2.5 years later, I was back with that woman again? Going back for some more. Back for some more. Now, granted, I'd only gotten far as the seventh step. I mean, excuse me, my apologies, the fourth step, halfway. I was writing on it when my sponsor died. So I hadn't really got into really looking at what's, you know, doing an inventory of any sort of anything to really look at myself, you know. But I didn't want to be alone, you know. I wanted to actually do something in my life that, I guess you could say, went beyond what my mother and father experienced. I wanted to break all them patterns, all them molds. I wanted that white picket fence. I had my son, she had our two kids, we had a dog, you know, we had a nice place, we had two cars, we had good jobs, I was making good money then as a chef. You know, I was, you know, and I wasn't caught up in the grip anymore, and that was freedom, you know. But my disease had manifested itself in all this other stuff. And for me, it's always been relationships, sexual immorality, all that kind of stuff to try to take me out of myself to make me feel good. You know, I took martial arts and I got so engulfed in that. I worked out as being a chef and going to meetings. I mean, I was on the run. You know, and I picked up addicts and took them back and forth to meetings. I was doing all this stuff to try to take me out of myself because I didn't want to have to. As long as you saw me in a meeting doing what I needed to do, I had your acceptance. You know, you could rely on me to do whatever I need to do. But I was still empty. Time went on. My father passed around the same time. I told her, you know, I can't deal with this shit no more. I'm done. You know, click up goodbye. Don't you know, another 2 years later, we were back together again. Guess what I did this time? I married her ass. Right now, my anniversary of my leaving her was yesterday. Sold every damn thing I had living in Frederick, sold everything, sold my house, kept my car, pulled my son out of school, gave away what I could give away. I moved to Martinsburg, West Virginia. Damn, to be with her and her two kids. I'm gonna do what my dad did because he took on a role of being a father to some children that wasn't his. And I'm gonna do it better than him because I've got some information. No. I did the same damn thing again. But, you know, I had learned some things this time, so I was a little more patient with it. Or should I say my disease was a little more patient with me. So push came to shove, and I said, you know what, I started getting back into my meetings. You know, I guess started to walk back, trying to get back to closer to recovery, get my relationship with a God of my understanding, which I always had one. I just never used him. You know, procrastinate, half-ass talk to him. You know, never actually really give thanks for what I had to be grateful for it. So when I left, after all that, there's something changed. So then I started to search for a sponsor. I mean, a sponsor. I mean, there's sponsors and there's sponsors. And not that I know exactly what that is, but I know what was in my heart, what I needed. You know, because my higher power told me, you know, be patient. And I got to talking to Al one day, and I asked him if he wanted a job. Because I had heard his story. You know, and he's ex-military and stuff, and I don't want to go into all that, but he had some information, and I saw the time that he's had clean, and I seen how he walked, and how his program, how spiritual he was, and how cut and dry, simple he could make it, because I can complicate the hell out of it. What goes on up in here? You know, I don't want to talk to people half the time because there's so much stuff up in there. So he told me I had to start over again. He also told me I had to surrender to my disease again. I was like, damn, I did that already. I did that already. But then I started to, you know, funny things started to happen as I started to get involved with people in recovery. Started going to more meetings and started something, you know, when the eyes are open, or like, let me just put it like this. When my ass was on fire, when I was using, I did what I had to do. My ass was on fire when I came in here to save my ass, I had to do what I had to do. You know? And I didn't really need, I'm not that unintelligent that I don't really need to somebody to tell me that in order to keep my job, I got to get up and go to work. You know, in order to stay clean, I got to wash my ass. You know, in order to learn something new about myself, I got to do some work. And nobody really, I'm not stupid. You know, I'm not stupid. And it's hard for me sometimes because I'm an active person that just, I don't want to have to sit down and ponder on things because my disease, like this morning coming in here, my disease had me thinking that I wasn't worthy enough to stand up here and talk to fellow addicts. I heard some stuff yesterday I sat in the meetings because I needed some fuel for the day. And I heard men talking about sexual molestation. I heard them talking about being in prison. I heard them talking about all other types of things, and women also. And there's a lot of stuff that I have never done that I couldn't relate to. And talking to the newcomer, I want the newcomer to understand, as I did, even though I don't feel as if, you know, man, I didn't walk down some of them paths as some of you people did, my fellow recovering addicts did. I still used just like you did. I still did a lot of cruddy stuff to get what I needed to get. You know, I've never been a person to stand in your face and hit you in the mouth, but I'll come from behind. I'll learn how to talk. I had a father that was abusive, so I learned how to manipulate him. Not so much to get what I needed, just to keep him the hell away from me. I stayed in the woods. That's how Paula started. I stayed in the woods because we lived in Brunswick and had a lot of land up there. And I stayed in the woods away from everybody else out by myself, so I didn't have to deal with nothing. So my one of my triggers is instead of the fight, I'll flight and come back, you know. And all these things are really starting to come, you know, starting to show up now. I'm really starting to see that codependency. I'm really starting to see, you know what, damn, Tony, you need some work. I'm going through another divorce. I'm coming up on my 45th birthday. I got a good job. I work for a very good company. I'm learning. I finally got a certification. I ain't never been certified in shit. I know how to use a pipe. Make it, save it, cook it, work it. Distribute it. Anything else, I didn't know how to, you know, I never learned anything. I never took the time to. But today, having a program and working some steps with my sponsor, he's given me an insight to some things that, you know, he said something to me when I talked about codependency and about manipulation and how I did things to help you to make me feel good about myself. Told me just how deceitful that was. That was me working you to get what I needed. My disease tell me, oh man, well, you're a piece of crap. Talks to me all the time. All the time. Told me to call this morning and say, I can't make it here because I'm sick. I came down here. And that same guy, last year, 2 years before that, and I'm not talking about the guy some 15 years ago, okay, that came into the rooms. I'm talking about somebody who's grown in the past year to learn, I cannot do this thing without y'all. I cannot do this thing without working the program. And granted, it's very hard for me. I'm a hands-on person. If you can put the steps in a physical form that I can connect the dots and I can put a bolt, in a nut, put it in a recipe, I can cook it up. I'll be fine. But when I got to sit down and take some time out and read and write, and man, I ain't got time for that shit. Before I know it, I'll be asleep because I'm tired. I'm tired. But I'm more tired of going through the same pain. You know, coming off of those relationships and coming in the process, you know, I got a text message from my soon-to-be ex-wife. You know, we got a timeshare, and I've been trying to keep that with me because, you know, I put money into that shit. So she texts me back. She got the paperwork all done. She said, well, you know, I haven't done anything with the divorce yet, but, you know, I'll get with you. And I'm like, okay, great. So help me God, I am looking forward to that. That's a chapter I can close. Granted, I still love that woman. I had to leave so that she can grow and so I can grow, so those kids can grow. And it's a hard thing. It's a hard pill to swallow. But where I'm at now, I was talking to a sponsor coming down the road. I'm in such a good place. I didn't realize he was going to be sitting here secretary yesterday. We were sitting in the freaking car. We went to the grocery store And we realize, oh, damn, he's going to be secretary in the same meeting I'm speaking at. HP. Saul Sharon, home group member. Lighthouse, Martinsburg. Nice little place. I'll talk about it. You know? My wife lives 3 blocks down the street. The irony of that is, when I got clean, when I started this program, 3 out of 4 meetings were right down the street from where I used. I used to pass some of the same guys on the way to the meeting that I either bought from, sold from, tricked from, or stole from. Thank you. And I didn't bow my head with shame. I held my head up because my life began. This past year, my life began again. I'm not going out looking for it. There's no relationship outside of the one that I have with the people in recovery, in my home group, in my area, my sponsor, my son, who's 14, and he's learning so much. He's teaching me some shit. I'm a dad. He brought me his report card the other day, and he had a hard time with the separation. His grades dropped. It took him out of being able to play football. And that was hard for me because I know he wasn't responsible for what I did. And it's been a struggle the last year to get him back on track. And he brought me his report card, and he got the honor roll. He actually called me up on the phone, and he said, Dad, guess what? And this was the day before yesterday, and he told me the teachers put me up for student of the month. Last February, he got a star award for academics for pulling his grades from where they were in the auditorium. You know, I couldn't be there. It came so quick, I had to, you know. So I called him before and I called him afterwards, let him know that I was there. And that hurt because he's been on this planet the whole time I've been clean and attempting to work a program of recovery. He's my saving grace. My higher power put something in my life, another human being in my life to care for, to takes me out of myself, no matter how often I want to put my foot in his ass. No matter how many times he comes to me and he pulls me up on something that I've said, and I've got to like, damn. He picked up on that? It's such a wonderful thing. I'm here this morning to share my experience, strength, and hope. Life happens. Change happens. I had to show up. See, in that past 3.5 years before I got to this point, I stopped going to meetings. I had a wife. I had 3 kids, 2 dogs. We got another dog. I was working on the house, getting it ready for sale. My job was doing good, you know, and so I had all those things, but there was still something missing. I didn't have God in my life. Started going back to church. And it's so cool because it's like going to a freaking meeting. They actually have meetings there. And I not so much did that for me, but to get my son involved with some Christian people so that he can make some decisions for himself. Because I can browbeat him and tell him till I'm blue in the face, you should do this because I did this and this is what it's going to get you in, you know. But, you know, I find myself having a meeting with my son, sharing my experience, strength, and hope with him. Not so much saying that you're going to do what I do, but you know what? This is what I did, and this is what I got. So some 5,761 days later, I'm that guy standing up in front of a bunch of recovering addicts at a convention. I'm involved with some men and women in recovery, and there ain't a damn thing sexual about it. It is real for me. I am so scared to go back to anything that I used to know. Everything that I learned as a child, everything that I learned as an adult, everything had to change. Be revised. What I thought I was doing right, it all had to change. And it's not as if I want to come up in here and I really don't. There's somebody else who's probably got a stronger story than I have, who has more to put out there. That's me. I don't need to be up here. What I can do around, you know. But for some reason, my higher power said, hey, Tony, you wished for it a long time ago. We're going to give it to you. Okay, so you got to get honest and get real, and I prayed for that. Because I can song and dance it, and I can build it up, and I can make myself look so good. Manipulate everything. But really, it's all what I'm doing to myself. You know, when I laid down in that fetal position after we moved, after I left, and I was in that same fetal position I was some 15 years ago in that hotel room, after I just pulled myself from a light fixture off of a extension cord. For me, it's not going back feeling that to using. For me, it's to stop the pain that from doing the same, repeating the same mistakes over and over and over again. You know, opening my mind to some new things. You know, making some changes. Reaching out and asking for help. Because I already told you I'd do everything. I don't need nobody. And it's hard for me to accept help. It's hard for me to actually not, it's hard for me to actually not think that I know everything. Because the end result is when I rely on so many people and have done it in the past, they failed me. You know, and sometimes following the wrong people will lead you down the wrong path. So I got a sponsor. Five minutes. And that's why I'm here today. So if you get anything from what I say, it's really not me talking. It's my higher power. It's the program of Narcotics Anonymous, because without it, I'd be dead most likely. And I'm not talking a physical death. I'm just talking a mental thing, maybe a vegetable or something. Because death would probably be a whole lot freaking easier. And granted, in the past 2 years, I wanted to do it, step out in front of a truck. Not anymore. No. Why, after so many years, am I sitting there contemplating suicide? Because I need to do some freaking work. It's quite simple. Keep it simple. So with that, I'm going to close. None of us ever have to use again. We're all miracles. For the newcomer, so help me God. Please keep coming back. I need you. I can't speak for everybody else. Thanks for letting me share.
Grateful for coming, Addict. My name is Al. They tell me that we are not all blessed and highly favored. See, we didn't just come here and get some freedom from the act of addiction. We got an opportunity to live. This next person I want to introduce is used to be a member of my home group. When she first came around, we fought, like not physically, but we fought. You know, because of that part of us that's like more alike than different. And through some work on my part, some work on her part, you know, today, like, you know, we do some things together. You know, I love this person. I was there when she came first came in the rooms, man. I've had the opportunity, the blessing to watch her grow in this process and work this recovery program. With this, I give you Sharon.
Good morning. My name's Sharon. I'm an addict. What are y'all doing up so early? I thought this room was going to have like a little bit of people. Damn. I come in here and there's a room full of people. Well, I want to take the time on behalf of the Chesapeake and Potomac area of Narcotics Anonymous to thank the God of my understanding. Now, I'm not thanking y'all for letting me speak. I'm thanking God for letting y'all have me up here to speak. Because I wasn't put on this circuit or whatever you call it. I wasn't put on here prior to me coming here. Late last night, when I'm getting ready to leave, somebody cornered me and said, "Can you please do this workshop?" And y'all tell me in NA we can't say no, and I said no. You know what I'm saying? Because my sponsor told me, don't put yourself in a position where you ain't comfortable. You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to deal with some feelings that you ain't ready to deal with. And I was uncomfortable because I have never done this before. I have never stand in front of all these kind of people at a convention and did a workshop. I ain't never did a workshop, let alone at a convention this big. So I was like, no, I ain't going to do it. You know, but then I had, you know, just for the day, talking about somebody who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. And I had some friends, and they said, you can do it. And that's all I needed, so I'm here. So I can't quote no literature. I done read some literature. I don't remember what I read. But I'm just going to tell you, share my experience, strength, and hope. You know, I got here May 9th, 1999. First time in recovery. Well, first time in NA. I ain't even gonna say recovery. First time in NA. Never knew nothing about this program. Never knew it exists. Got locked up a few times when I was using. Never been to jail. I did an overnight bit. I mean, you know, go in for the weekend, come out, but I ain't got no jail stories for you. Got assigned to go get papers. Court order, get paper signed. I went to AA meetings. I walked in. I dropped my slip off. I left. I came back when the meeting was over. I picked my paper up. So I didn't know nothing about this process. So in 1999, my uncle came, picked me up in Washington, D.C., and brought me to Martinsburg, West Virginia, to the VA hospital. And that was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Hi, Dan. You got to be seen. Anyway, you know, I came up there, and when I got into that hospital on 6th floor, the only thing I wanted, because I was too stupid to even know I was in pain, I just felt the shame and the guilt, and I wanted to get rid of that. I wanted to get rid of that shame and guilt that I was feeling for stealing from my mother, crawling on my belly like I was a snake. You know what I'm saying? Going under the bed and all that. You know, calling myself a lesbian and sleeping with men. I felt like that was the worst betrayal I could ever do to myself. You know, the lying, the stealing, you know, that self-degradation. I wanted to get rid of that. So I knew something that if I could get back a relationship with the God of my understanding, because I had that relationship, and my relationship did come from dogma. That's where mine came from. See, I still got the God that my grandmother gave me, that my mother gave me. Because the God that my mother, my grandmother gave me was loving. It was kind. It was caring. Nobody told me I was going to hell, you know. Because my mother always told me, if somebody tell you going to hell, ask them, do they have one to send you to? So I didn't never worry about that. You know, God didn't abandon me. I just chose not to deal with them until it was necessary. Like, make sure they there when I get there with a good package. You know, so when I got here, only thing I wanted from you people was to help me to get back in touch with God. So I used to go to meetings and I used to say, my name is Sharon, I'm a recovering spirit. And people like Al would say, we addicts. I said, y'all okay, y'all are addicts. Y'all be what y'all want to be, but I'm a recovering spirit. You know, and I was real defiant when I got here, and I can still be defiant today. You know what I'm saying? The topic is, am I just clean or am I in recovery? You know, I want to come up here and tell y'all that I'm just clean. Because sometimes I don't feel like I'm in recovery. But then I had to think about what recovery was. Recovery is an active change in my attitudes and my ideas. And it starts with surrender. And there's some things we must do, like work the steps, get a sponsor, help somebody else with no strings attached, pray, go to meetings. I do all that. So I allow the disease to tell me I ain't in recovery because I do some other stuff. Like I'm in a relationship with somebody that got a wife. I mean, with somebody that got a husband. Okay, let me get that straight. And been in that relationship for 4 years. And can't let go. Can't let go. You know? But I'm honest when I pray to God about understanding. I say, God, I can't let go and I don't want to let go. So your will be done. If you don't want me in this relationship, you got to give me everything that I need to get out of it. You got to give me the desire. You got to give me the willingness. You got to give me the everything. I don't have nothing that I need to say bye to this relationship. See, so the disease told me because I had that going on in my life, I'm not in recovery. But what about the fact that I'm going to meetings, I'm working the steps, I got sponsees? I'm helping other addicts. I'm doing everything else. See, the disease told me because my character defects show up, I ain't in recovery. You know, but what I come to realize is there's no model of the perfect recovering addict because it's said in the literature. You know, I'm no profound speaker and I'm not trying to be. And like, unlike Tony, I didn't ask to be up here. But God saw fit to put me here for a reason. And I don't know who he put me here to help. Maybe it ain't none of y'all. Maybe it's just me. You know, when I got here, I got a sponsor that was given to me. My uncle, that same uncle, he introduced me to this woman. He said, it's your sponsor. I said, thank you. And it was a good thing. It was a good thing because she's very spiritual. And she's been my sponsor since I've been here. I celebrate 11 years May 16th. My clean day, May 9th. And for the newcomer, I just want you to know that you don't have to relapse. You can come here and stay. And if you do relapse, just come back. You know, because I remember I used to be ashamed to say that. I used to be ashamed to say that I didn't relapse, that this is my first time. Because people would look at me like, oh, look at her. She thinks she better than everybody now because she ain't never relapsed. See, I would allow the disease to tell me that good is bad and bad is good all the time, even in recovery. You know, I have some other issues that I deal with. I've been in the military, I got PTSD, bipolar, and some other stuff going on. And sometimes I lay in my bed and I don't even want to deal with y'all people. I turn my phone off, I look at it, I say, oh, NA shit. And I don't even answer the phone, you know. And I'm liable to jump all over the place because that's how my mind works. My mind's jumpy, you know. But anyway, when I got here, I got a home group while I was still in treatment. I got the sponsor. And started building a network. Started doing real good. Started getting better. Started working the steps. I started getting better. And after I had about, I think I had about 4 or 5 years clean, I got called to active duty. And prior to that, I truly, truly in my heart believe I was in recovery. I was in the middle of this thing. I was in service, sponsees. I mean, I was doing the damn thing. I was doing it. I was living it. And I believed in it. And then what happened is I had about 4 or 5 years clean. I got called to active duty during that time when the Iraqi war came out. And I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky. And I started, I was the NCO, Prestige. I bought me a 2000 Infinity, a white one, property. And I started making more money than I had ever made in my life. Because the first time I was in the military, I went in at 17, got out at 20. They wasn't paying as much as they was paying almost 20 years later. So I started making more money than I ever made in my life. So they go the money part. Property, money, prestige. Diverted from my primary purpose. So I got this money, I got this property, and I got this prestige. And I go in the cafeteria one day. She about 22, I'm 45, 40-something, and she look good. She look at me, I look at her, and recovery go out the door. All of a sudden, I become the sugar mama like all the sugar mamas I had. All of a sudden, all men, y'all ain't the only ones to do it. All of a sudden, my swag come on. She gave me her number. She a civilian. She gives me her number. And 2 days later, I'm in love. I am buying clothes for the kids at the PX. I done bought her a ring. Cost more than the one I bought myself. Put a down payment. I mean, I gave her money twice to fix her car, right? And the car kept breaking down. I don't know if she was spending the money or not. So I was like, damn, this, come on, let's go get you a new car, right? So she couldn't get the car in her name, so they said, well, put it in your name. Woo! They say, put it in your name, and we'll put her name on it, and then that way they'll build her credit up. So the next car go in my name. I told you, I just got a truck, right? And look, check this out. I'm not even on active duty. I'm a National Guard on active duty. So that's only going to last as long as they need us, and that could be 3 months. And when I go home, I ain't got no job. Okay, talking about some practice of insanity. See, the second step said we will practice, and I'm not going to, if I misquoted one of y'all, literature people, please stand up and help me. But the second step says something like, long after working this step, we'll come to realize just how insane we truly are. Long after being around here, 20 years, I'll find out just how damn crazy I am. Now, I done went out and bought all this stuff. Knowing when I go home, whenever that is, my disability check, $300. I got a $400 car note for my truck. Her car is $250. And plus, I got to pay insurance. And when I go home, I got to pay rent. Well, thank God I stayed on active duty for 18 months. But anyway, so I give it a car. And I got an expectation. Y'all told me I wasn't supposed to have any expectations, right? But I got an expectation. I put my name on this damn car. You're going to be with me. I don't want you to do. You're going to be with me. So I go to the club one night, the NCO club, and she's sitting on some guy's lap. I'm like, what the fuck? Give me my damn keys. She tells me, I'm not giving you no keys, Sharon. What's wrong with you? That's my friend and ain't... I said, give me my... She told me, wait, I ain't giving you these keys. I said, okay, y'all taught me something. See, all the recovery ain't go out the window, you know, because I want to snatch the shit out of her and do some other stuff, but I said, okay, let's just call the MPs. So when the MP came, I said, would you please tell this young lady to give me my key? She said, that's my car. So remember now, see how good God is? God is good. Remember, I was getting the car for her, and it's going to be in her name. Remember, her credit was fucked up. So the car, my name. So I told the MP, I said, look who name on the title. I mean, on the registration. He said, well, ma'am, you got to give her keys. That's her car. See, so God will do for me what I won't do for myself or I can't. People say God won't do for you what you can do for yourself. The God of my understanding will do for me what I won't do for myself. You know what I'm saying? He said, that fool ain't got sense enough. Let me go ahead and help him. That fool ain't got sense enough. You know, so I continued to help her. I took the car back. I continued to help her. I also started seeing her friend. And women are treacherous. Y'all are treacherous. Sneaky and treacherous. Because what happened is we were riding around getting ready to go to a club. And the friend dials her number on my phone and puts it in the seat. And we're having a conversation about what we're going to do later. Right? So I dropped the friend off. I go over there. She said, you was going to get some, but you ain't getting shit now. Go get it from her. So that was the end of that. So now the friend driving the car. Woo! See, I needed something outside of me. Even though I told y'all I had this relationship with God, I remember calling my cousin who's like, her faith, she doesn't do this program, but she has a faith that from outside of this program. And I asked her, you know, I said, you know, I'm feeling real kind of funny right now. I said, because I love God and I got a God, but sometimes God just ain't enough. Because I can't hold God at night. You know, I can't touch him. I can't feel him. I'm telling you, this was 5 years ago. So I proceeded to live like that the whole time I was down in Kentucky. You know, dealing with her, dealing with her friend, and then they sent me up here to Walter Reed, and I really thought I had this thing then, because I got down in D.C., and all my little gay buddies, a bunch of them was in recovery, so it was justifiable for me to go to the clubs and hang out. Because I'm in there with like 30 recovery people. Oops, I'm not breaking anybody anonymity, am I? And I just went and I just did everything else to get outside of myself. Now, granted, I had worked the steps. I had worked on some steps. I did the first step. I knew that I was powerless. I knew that I was powerless over people, places, and things, and myself, and my thinking. You know, emotionally, inner unmanageability, I accepted that. You know, I surrendered to the fact that until I started really, really getting honest with myself about what was going on, I was going to continue to feel like I was feeling. You know, so I had to do that fourth step. And what my fourth step revealed to me was that I wasn't as bad as I thought I was, but I wasn't as good as I thought I was. And I had identity issues. And when I say I had identity issues, I'm not talking about identity issues with my sexuality. I'm talking about I have identity issues with not knowing who I am, because growing up as a little girl, my grandmother always told me that she'd get drunk and she'd say, "You little red bitch, my son ain't your goddamn father." And so I always want to know, you know, and I would bug my mother, "Is that my real father?" So I was looking for acceptance from other people. You know what I'm saying? I was always looking for some kind of acceptance because I didn't know who I was. Even so today, I will sit home and I will, and after doing some work, I will sit home, you know what I'm saying? And I will cry because I'm not sure who my father is. Even though that man loved me, he died when I was 10. You know, I can remember a couple years back, I asked my mother, I said, "Do you think it's too late to have him exhumed? Is there anything left?" Because I'm serious as shit. I wanted to have a DNA test. Because I needed to know, it was that important for me to know who I am. You know, I don't know where I'm going with this. Anyway, you know, doing that four step, I shared some stuff with my sponsor because that was my whole fear. That was the reason I used the stuff that I found out in the four step that I was doing. I thought I was a pedophile because when I was like 7 years old, I was playing with other little kids, you know, doing stuff. I thought maybe I was molested and didn't know it. And all that stuff kept me in bondage and made me think I was sick. So I shared those things with my sponsor and being able to share them with her and find out that I wasn't the only one that did that kind of stuff and I wasn't unique, I found some freedom. See, there's freedom in the steps, and I know that. But I got to a place in my recovery where I started regressing because recovery is an ongoing process. It is an ongoing process. And A friend of mine has always described recovery. It's almost like going up a hill on skates. And if you ain't steady trying to move forward, you're going to slide right back down. You know what I'm saying? But because I make mistakes in recovery, because I make bad choices, that don't mean I ain't recovering. That just means I'm human. That just means I'm a human being. You know, I practice spiritual principles, but I don't practice them every day. I don't practice them perfectly, you know. I was having fun, because I didn't come in here to look sad like some of y'all people look. I know y'all just waking up. Well, maybe I'm just boring, because y'all look like y'all at a funeral. Damn. I mean, smile even if you don't want to. You know what I'm saying? Y'all talking about I'm grateful recovering addicts, and you're sitting in here with frowns on your face. You know, I remember when I was a newcomer, I said, damn, if a newcomer walked in here, they want to know, like, oh, shit, I must be at the funeral. What it be? You know what I'm saying? I don't know if anybody getting anything out of what I'm saying because I didn't come up here and prepare a script. Because I'm not a speaker, I was asked to deliver a message. And it's a difference. See, I didn't write out a dissertation or prepare something. Because recovery has given me some rewards. You know, I came here, I went back to school because y'all taught me. Y'all said, lost dreams awaken, new possibilities arise. So when I was growing up as a little girl, I did not want to be a crackhead. I wanted to be a lawyer. So I went back to school, and I got a bachelor's degree, and then I went back and I got a master's. Then I went back and I did 1 year law school. But guess what, I got lazy, and I stopped doing the work. So they kicked me out of law school. I didn't think I was gonna tell nobody. God, I told you, don't tell my secrets. You know, I came in here from living under a house. I don't mean in the basement. I ain't talking about the basement. I'm talking about under the house, to owning a house, you know. And those are the outward rewards, but the inward rewards is I like who I am today. I love me. I may not like some of the things I do and some of the choices I make, but I can look in the mirror now and I have to drop my head down. You know, self-awareness is a gift. Self-awareness is the best gift that I got out of this process, because I become aware of the things I do and the things I say. You know, the 10th step, that's a precious gift there, because it gives me the ability to look at myself every day. You know, take a look, what harm did I cause? Was I good to me today? You know, so am I clean or am I in recovery? If I'm comparing myself to some of y'all out there, I may think I'm just clean. But they told me I got one story in his mind, and I'm sticking to it. So I'm clean. I'm in recovery today, based on my story and the work I've done for me. You know, I found freedom for me. It says we have one promise, freedom from active addiction, that an addict, any addict, may lose the desire, stop using, and find a new way of life. You know, I share this in my area, and people look at me like I'm crazy sometimes. That new way of life that they're talking about, each individual determines what that new way of life is for them. Each individual. Somebody in here aspiring to go to World Service and be NA King. I don't know. Queen of King NA. I'm all right just picking up a newcomer, giving them a ride. See, I don't have to be up here. I'm up here because I was asked to do it and somebody else believed in me. I'm all right just picking up the cups when y'all leave out the room. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't want to be in service. I want to be up service, of maximum service to the God of my understanding. You know, I ask God to use me as he see fit, you know. And, you know, talking about the goodness of God, how good is God? God is good. But how good, all the time. See, we say that. God's good all the time. But how good have you been to God? How good have I been to God? You know, I was in a meeting last night, and they was doing the banners, right? And people were booing when certain areas' banner came up. And that puzzled me. I couldn't understand that. I'm saying one program, right? Didn't they say one fellowship? We're a fellowship of men and women? Why would we be booing because another area banner is being announced? That puzzled me. You know, so when I say God is good, all of y'all out there are part of that God that I'm talking about is good. So if I can't be good to y'all, how am I being good to God? Now, I understand everybody not going to love each other, and we ain't going to be all, you know, huggy and all that kind of stuff. You know, this guy right here, man, I couldn't stand him. Tell you I couldn't stand him. I'm going to share this real quick because my memory just came back. It just kicked in. You know, I got to be very careful in here of being judgmental. Turn it off, Al. I gotta be very, 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 very careful of being judgmental. Even that person would say, come on, man, let's leave. She ain't saying nothing. Because I remember, I told y'all I was in a relationship with the woman for 4 years, right? And I had 7 years, and she had 7 months when we got together, right? Now, when I got up in here, I had 7 months, and the other woman had 5 years. Right, they got me. But anyway, prior to me getting with this woman, one of my friends in my network, he was dealing with a newcomer. And oh my goodness, I let him have it. Leave that newcomer alone. What's wrong with you? You can't be following no newcomers up in here. Let them live. God said, okay, Miss Judgmental, okay. It wasn't about 6 months later. I had me a newcomer. And I had to kindly go to him and say, you know what? I apologize. I apologize. So be careful about what you say you ain't gonna do in here. Be careful about how you take somebody else's inventory. Be very careful about how you point that finger. You know what I'm saying? And I thank God for the ability to come in here, because sometimes I go to meetings and I feel like I'm the only one getting naked. Because the ones who are judging, those ones hold on to secrets and judging me because I can tell mine. You know, and like I was saying, this man right here, I didn't like him, right? And I was like, man, he got all that time and he doing blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. Shit, I got some time and I started doing blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. I was like, man, time don't make you superhuman. Time do not make you... prone from life on life terms. Now I know some of y'all in here done worked the steps and have grown, become spiritual giants, and don't make mistakes, but I'm not one of them. I'm gonna confess right now, I am not one of them. I am liable to leave out here, and y'all just heard me talking about God and how good he is, and I have a relationship with him, and I talk to him, and I don't bargain with him no more, and you know, I ask him what I can do to help him and all that, right? But I will leave out of here and cuss somebody ass out. I will cuss somebody ass out. Because y'all told me to take the mask off, and I'm not putting it on for none of y'all. I refuse to put myself back in that cage that I unlocked just so somebody can think. Because I can come in here and act recovery. Oh, I know how to play recovery now. I come sit down and sit in the seat and be quiet and just look like I'm recovering and shit, quote a little piece of the literature to you and oh yeah, amen, oh yeah, I can do that. But that ain't what I'm here for. I was a phony for too long. Come in here to be no damn phony, you know? So I don't know if y'all got anything out of share, but what I got out of it was the opportunity to know if I had to do this again, I can. Thanks for letting me share.